How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
I am delightful, let me
awesome.
Tell you.
Delightful. I'm glad to hear that. I am so happy to hear that.
I'm glad you're glad.
And you know what? Say. I hope all of our listeners are just as delightful as you are.
I bet they
In
are.
Fact, I know they are.
Mm-hmm. I know. I would hope they are. So what's going on, Jen? What's going on?
Oh, you know, just living the dream.
Hey, me.
Each and every day.
Me too. Mm-hmm. A winky dink.
I know. Huh. It's been fun.
It has been
fun. You know,
well,
living in the...
I wouldn't go that far. I would not say fun, but yeah.
Do you have another case for us today? I heard you did. I do, Jen.
Let me just say, again, how many times can we go over this? Oh, by the way, our anniversary is next week. This will be the last episode of season two. So next week, we start season three.
Woohoo!
I was all excited about that. I don't know why. Because there is no seasons. I just
No, there are, it's just years. Yes, I know. July 11th is our second anniversary, right?
7/11.
Or is it a third? Or third
no,
anniversary?
It's our second. I wish it was our third. On our third, we're going to be rich and living in mansions and swimming in pools. All our listeners to banquets in our honor.
And you know why we'll be rich? Because the apocalypse would have totally been in effect and it's totally ruined the economy. Yeah.
And then we wake up from our dream. I got you.
Exactly.
I got you.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's hear what you got.
All right, Jen. So, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast. I always think, and so do you, and I'm sure many true crime listeners, part of it is about the psychology of why people do what they do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've never understood, and I guess who can, is a child molester, right? Abduction and all that. And then what's even worse is to take that child molester and then they really don't think that they did anything wrong, right? So it's whatever. So that's what we're going to kind of venture into today. So today we are headed to the Pacific Northwest, just a little bit south of Seattle, Washington, to a town by the name of Lakewood. Lakewood is home to the McChord Air Force Base, with lots of its residents supported by the base. You know, many work there. A lot of the residents know each other, or at least they know a friend of a friend. It's a pretty small community at around 59,000. All the people in the area, they love it. It's a very good place to raise a family. They all feel safe. That is until July 4th, 1996. And that date would change as a monster would pay a visit to Lakeland and change it forever.
Hmm. No type of monster like a human monster.
Right? That's the worst. It's around 6 p.m. on a warm July evening. I mean, as warm as you can be in Seattle, right? And the town is looking forward to the fireworks fun. And some of those that were really excited were single mom Rhonda Francese and her three young daughters, Cindy, Ashley, and Brittany. As soon as the evening ended and the sun dropped and the fireworks had ended, the girls knew the rules. Once the lights went on, they needed to go home. Both Brittany and Ashley made it home, but Cindy was not home when they had arrived. Early that evening, 9-year-old Cindy had asked her mom if she could go to a neighbor's house to play. At 9 p.m., Cindy was still not home, and Rhonda was not very happy with Cindy because she knew Cindy knew the rules about being home once the lights went on. And this was kind of a steadfast rule for them. Mm-hmm. Rhonda decides to go over to the neighbor's house and she knocks on the door. Nobody answers. It becomes apparent that nobody's even home. Rhonda is starting to become a little bit concerned. Rhonda goes to ask another neighbor if perhaps she's seen Cindy, because, you know, Cindy was supposed to go to the neighbor's to play. Well, the neighbor tells Rhonda that that family are out of town, and they actually have been for a while. Rhonda's in a little bit of shock and not quite sure if she heard that correctly. And if she did, she starts, you know, thinking, like, what the heck's going on? Cindy left to go to the house. She's never come home. Rhonda goes inside and immediately calls 911. She tells the 911 operator that Cindy was supposed to go to the neighbor's house, but that the neighbors aren't home, and she's looked everywhere in the area for Cindy and can't find her. Officers are dispatched, and they arrive at the house. Rhonda tells police the last time she saw Cindy was at 3 p.m. when she had asked permission to go to the neighbor's house, and Rhonda watched her walk out the door, and like a little nine-year-old, I'm sure she was like skipping, happy as can be, without a care in the world. It's summer, right?
Right, hopefully, yeah.
As they often do, police suggest, perhaps, you know what I'm going to say here, right?
Mm-hmm. She ran away?
She ran away. Yeah. Rhonda knows better. After all, Cindy's only 9 years old. I mean, nine. What, third grade? She's a baby.
You can still run away at 9 years old, but it doesn't sound like this little girl was
right
one to do such a thing.
Rhonda explains that Cindy is a really good kid. Good kid, good student, good manners. She would never do that. As night grew into day and little Cindy was still nowhere to be found, Pierce County detectives Teresa Berg and Rick Adamson were assigned to the case. And they know that as each hour passes, the likelihood of finding Cindy alive diminishes. A search is launched with the hopes of bringing Cindy home. But the area that they needed to search was vast. It included, you know, not just neighborhoods, but industrial parks, which, as we all know, are very crowded with junk, I guess. You know, like there's a lot there and a lot not there. Like a lot of people not there, but a lot of junk. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying?
An industrial park?
Yeah. Meaning like it's a lot of empty space when the place isn't operating, right?
Oh, so there's a lot of businesses there, buildings normally.
Lots going on is what I'm saying.
Right, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then when it shut down, there's nothing there. So it's
right, just the building.
Mm-hmm. The off hours, yeah. As the search is taking place, Detective Berg decides she wants to talk to Rhonda. She wants to get some more information about this and, you know, maybe it would lead to some answers. Rhonda tells Detective Berg that the girl's father was no longer around. He wasn't in the picture. He had been arrested on drug charges and at that time was serving time in Nevada on those drug charges. Detective Berg asked Rhonda if she could think of anyone who may want to harm Cindy or maybe, you know, take her for a bit, maybe as a joke or actually just pick her up and hang out with her. Cindy said she can't think of anybody. As all this is going on, Detective Berg realizes that Rhonda's having a hard time. Rhonda's having a hard time focusing. And in fact, she kind of goes back on what she said earlier and says she can't really remember the last time she saw Cindy, but she knows it was sometime between 3 and 4:30.
I would probably be scattered brain too if I lost my daughter. I'd be in a panic.
And I think you start second guessing yourself. Mm-hmm. Did I really see her? What time was it? Was I wrong? So you go back to that, and you know, now the window that at first Rhonda was pretty adamant that she'd seen Cindy at 3 o'clock when she left to go to the neighbor's house. Well, opening that window up from 3 to 4:30 means, I mean, that's a lot of time, and a lot of time that things could happen, right? As far as alibis go and trying to track somebody down
right,
that could have harmed Cindy.
Right. 90 minutes is a long time to pass without knowing exactly where your child is.
Exactly. So Detective Berg asked Rhonda to come down to the station and take a polygraph test. It is during the polygraph exam, by way of questioning, Rhonda knows that police now believe she may know more than she's saying. In fact, Rhonda passes all the questions except for one. Do you know anyone who may want to harm your daughter? This question came up and was inconclusive.
Huh.
So with the polygraph, you have a pass, a fail, or an inconclusive. Inconclusive obviously means you don't go either way. But again, this is a single mother, three little girls. Cindy was the oldest, by the way, at age 9. as Rhonda was waiting in an interview room as officers were watching her through the two-way glass, Rhonda's boyfriend, Derek Blackwell, burst into the room that she is seated in. He's loud, he's obnoxious, he's demanding answers. He's kind of a blowhard, is the way I'd kind of describe him. Mm-hmm. He yells at the police officers and said, you know, we're finished here, we're done. You talk to us, you need a lawyer, whatever. He grabs Rhonda and out the door they went. This, of course, makes police a little bit more than suspicious. They decide to look into Derek's background and they've learned that he likes to drink a lot. Hello, that doesn't make you a bad person. He worked part-time at the railroad. Derek didn't have the greatest reputation, but again, that doesn't mean you're a killer, right? I mean, look at you. They go to visit Derek and they ask him to come into the station for further questioning. Derek claims that he was with Rhonda and the girls during the morning hours of July 4th, but on that day, he had to report to work at 3 p.m. So he was not with them after 3 p.m. Now, this is a little problem because, you know, Rhonda had at first said that Cindy had departed the house at 3 o'clock to go to the neighbor. But opening that up and making the time frame be a little wiggly, shall we say, that changes things a little bit, you know? Derek Blackwell takes the polygraph exam and he passes. Detectives decide they need to talk to Cindy's sisters, the little girls, to see if they have anything that may help them with the investigation. Detective Berg decides to take Ashley outside and ask her to, you know, come around the neighborhood with her to see, like, some of the places that the little girls play. Now, you and I both know, because we have little girls, sometimes they're a little shy at first, and you got to kind of warm up to them, right?
Not my kids.
not yours. Okay, uh-uh. You're right.
Yeah.
Mine. But one of the ways is to kind of befriend them. No right. pressure, mm-hmm. right? So that's what Detective Berg goes in with. And she, you know, takes Ashley outside around the neighborhood, asking Ashley to point out houses and say who lives there, what's that person's name, what's that kid's name, who do you play with, whatever. So Detective Berg is a little bit shocked when Ashley points out one of the houses and she mentions that Cindy likes to play with somebody at the house by the name of Raz. And Detective Berg says, oh, is Raz a little boy? Is he your age? And she's like, no, he's like mommy's age.
Oh, yuck.
Well, of course, Detective Berg is a little thrown off by that. So she goes back and she asks Rhonda if she knows the man who lives down the street. And Rhonda tells her that, yes, his name is Guy Rasmussen, and he is a local musician. Rhonda also tells the detective that when Cindy came home, one day she came home, she was really excited about a new friend she met, a new grown-up friend. And she tells her mom all about this grown-up friend. Well, then Rhonda was like, how old is he? Is he like 13 years old? Because, you know, to a 9-year-old, a 13-year-old is a big kid.
Right.
And Cindy said, actually, no, he's probably more like your age. Well, Rhonda immediately kind of got a bad feeling and tried to explain to little Cindy that you're a little girl. You cannot hang out with grownups. That's just, you can't. So Cindy agreed that she would not hang out with him anymore. But as we all know, little kids kind of fib a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of tell the truth all the time.
Well, they're easily swayed by people also, older people. Mm-hmm. Oh, your mom won't mind if you just come in for a minute. She doesn't even have to know.
Detectives go and pay a visit to Raz. When they knock on the door, a young, beautiful girl answers, and she tells them that Raz has actually been gone for a few days to attend a music festival. Okay. And the dates kind of work out because, you know, little Cindy disappeared on the evening of July 4th. So they decide they want to go ahead and have a dog, you know, kind of take a look around the place, see if he can sniff out anything. Dog comes around. He doesn't hit on anything. So they're like, okay, you know, maybe, but, you know, we still have to follow up. So police are able to track down Raz and speak to him. And they actually clear him as a suspect because he, according to the dates that he went on the music festival, he was gone. Mm-hmm. So now police are back to square one. Police run a list of nearby sex offenders. You know, they're trying to cross your T's and dot your I's.
Mm-hmm.
They run a list of sex offenders, and they venture out to talk to some of them that are located in the nearby area. They find the sex offenders to be very open and honest. They even allowed the officers in their homes to be searched. And that was, you know, without a search warrant. They were pretty impressed by that. And unfortunately, they could not link any of these people to the disappearance of Cindy. As day 10 of the search for Cindy Allinger comes to a close, the search is called off, with Cindy still missing. But unfortunately, she wouldn't be missing for much longer.
I don't like the sound of that.
Thank you. It's just 4 days later when an off-duty police officer makes a horrific discovery right off the interstate highway. Under a pile of discarded carpet, a little girl's shoe was sticking out barely, but enough for an officer to know what he had found. Detective Adamson and Detective Berg were called and sent to Lakewood, but they already knew who was under that carpet. As detectives arrive, they notice how this was the dumping ground for trash, most likely due to the convenience of the nearby highway, and that little 9-year-old Cindy was thrown out just like trash. Heartbreaking, right?
It is heartbreaking.
As they look at her little lifeless body, her face and torso had visible bruising, indicating that she was beat on. There were 3 marks that looked like cigarette burns on her body, and they were pretty much close together, right?
Mm-hmm.
The dress that she was wearing when she disappeared is bunched up above her tummy, indicating that there was a sexual assault. The underwear that she had been wearing had been removed and shoved down her mouth. Now, looking at the crime scene, authorities are quick to make a few observations. Obviously, the perpetrator is a smoker. But the way he left Cindy's body illustrated he had no consideration for her, that he was simply trying to get rid of her. He dumped her quick and easy. He wanted to get rid of her, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bruises indicate he's violent. I mean, she's 9. He beat her up? Really? The cigarette burns indicate a form of torture, a torture in which he enjoyed, and that was for his pleasure, right? Now, that could have been done before she died or after. They don't yet know. This time, instead of the search dogs, cadaver dogs are brought to the scene, and they want to see if they can hit on a scent and a track that would lead them to the killer of Cindy. And this technology, or I don't even know if it's technology, whatever it's called, is fascinating to me. The fact that Cindy's body, I guess the death of her, would still be on the killer, killer's person. So that's what they were.
Wait, you said the death of her?
Yeah, like her scent, I guess, would still be on the killer, right? Even after he left her, so that they're hoping that the cadaver dogs would hit on the scent of Cindy.
Got
on the killer as he departed from her.
The smell of death would be on the man, the killer.
Correct.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes. One of the dogs hit on a scent and followed it through the brush. And this was kind of, you know, it was like in a field and it was right off the highway, but like a discarded, we've all seen those right off the, like almost like a trash area off of a interstate, right? The dog followed it through some brush, some rugged hills or whatever. He went through a hole in the fence across the freeway. And this little doggo kept going for more than a quarter of a mile. Is that amazing or what? Following the scent.
Those dogs are amazing. Yeah.
Right? That is amazing to me. He would end up stopping at a payphone at a gas station. It is here that the scent ended. So it's pretty clear that we can see that the dog was following somebody to the payphone. Detectives now have the sad news of breaking this information to Rhonda, who is visibly distraught. Honestly, as all moms, you're still going to be under the belief that your daughter's alive. I mean, I don't think that you could ever think that they weren't, right? Until you were told differently. Rhonda was still holding on to the hopes that little Cindy would come home. The medical examiner comes in and he determines that due to insect activity, Cindy, which broke my heart because I could never put that together. I'm going to start that again. You put that at the end, Nico, whatever. That broke my heart because I was like, you know what? I could never put insect activity with my child. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like that. Ugh, I'm tearing up thinking about it. Okay. The medical examiner determined that due to insect activity, Cindy was most likely killed within 24 hours after disappearing. Mind you, she wasn't time for 14 days. The cause of death.
That's almost, I hate to say it, but it's almost a godsend that she wasn't tortured for longer and held. Right? But you don't even want her to be hurt in the first place. And I feel guilty saying that.
I know what you mean. Mm-hmm. I think most people would agree with you. I mean, the cause of death was asphyxiation. The underwear that was shoved down her throat went to her windpipe and it actually cut off her air. So I was thinking, you know how far down that would have to be? That'd have to be pretty far back in your throat. She's a little 9-year-old girl, mm-hmm. right? There is no DNA found under her fingernails. And this leads detectives to believe she was knocked out before she was attacked because she didn't fight her assailant. She didn't fight him. And they also believe she was most likely attacked from behind. She never saw the attacker coming. Cindy was raped, but the killer left no semen behind. She's 9. Okay, sorry.
No, I know. I don't. We say this all the time, every time we do one of these cases.
I don't
understand the attraction with children.
I don't.
The sexual attraction.
I think part of it is power, too. But we're going to get to that with this guy because it occurred to me with this fella. Police go back to Cindy's neighborhood and they're going to do some knock and talks with family who live in the area. And doesn't take long, they hit pay dirt. A little neighbor girl, and she's really a child, told officers she saw somebody that looked like Cindy, the description of Cindy, walking with a guy. He was a white adult male and she was actually holding his hand. This was on July 4th. The child described the man as having longer hair and facial hair on his chin. That would be a goatee, by the way, because she's a kid. I thought that was cute. He was wearing a t-shirt with lots of colors, which is tie-dyed t-shirt and jean shorts. Another witness comes forward and tells police he was outside grilling. Now, this is July 4th, mind you. July 4th, as we all know in America. Big grilling day, big barbecue day. So this fellow was outside grilling and barbecuing all day, and he said he noticed a man who was walking hand in hand with a little girl. The little girl happened to be in a flowered dress, similar to the one that Cindy was wearing the day she disappeared. And the couple walked back into the woods. Now, the man said it only stuck out to him because he never saw the pair come out of the woods. He was outside grilling for most of the afternoon, right?
Mm-hmm.
The witness confirmed what the young child had said as well. The white man had long, unkempt hair, tie-dye t-shirt, shorts, and facial hair. Now, the details of the man described seem just a tad bit familiar to officers. Familiar in that the police may have already paid a visit to him, and in fact, they did. The man described by witnesses sounded a lot like the man Ashley, which is Cindy's little sister, mm-hmm. described to police that afternoon when she led Detective Berg around the neighborhood.
Are we speaking about Raz?
It is that long-haired musical hippie.
Mm-hmm. Long-haired Raz.
Right? Mm-hmm. Guy Rasmussen, a very adult friend of Cindy. Detectives, they head over there. Got to go back. This is like a circle. As I was writing the story, I'm like, this is a circle. These poor police officers have to be exhausted because it's like point A to B, mm-hmm. to C to D, back to A to D to B, back to C, right?
That's how work in a case usually goes.
I know, it's exhausting. They head back over to try to find Guy, Raz, as he's known. When officers knocked on the door, a beautiful woman answered the door, young girl, right, of course. And she tells officers that Raz had been out of town attending a musical festival.
Right.
Officers head back over because they want to find out about if Raz really was out of town on that musical festival adventure, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they go over and they find out that Cindy really liked Raz and Raz actually really liked Cindy. He paid a lot of attention to her. That wasn't just it. All the sisters would go over and hang out at Raz's house and watch him play drums with his friends and things like that. Now, these are little girls. I'm sure that they kind of like the attention of just, being elsewhere. They're little kids, right? Mm-hmm. So they want to go do something kind of fun.
Who doesn't, really?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now that his name is kind of sticking out more, police, they decide they need to look into his background. So officers call to the hometown of Guy Rasmussen. And they find out that 7 years prior, Guy Rasmussen was arrested as he tried to snatch a little 10-year-old off a bicycle. The young girl screamed and ran. And, I mean, she made a scene. And let me tell you, people, do that. I don't mm-hmm. scream your little head off, right? She made it to safety. But Rasmussen was caught, and he was eventually convicted on a charge of second-degree assault. Now, prosecutors couldn't determine if that attack was sexually motivated. Therefore, they couldn't charge him with a sex crime, and this allowed him to be off the sex registry list, right? Which is what the police went and looked up earlier. This is why all this all kind of connects, you know, and like how people, they miss one thing, and do you know what I'm saying? Like, you just miss one thing, right?
Like one charge or miss?
Yeah, like if he would have been on that sex offender list, they probably would have caught him earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, they wanted to know what else this guy's been up to. So they placed some more phone calls, and it seems, it did not disappoint. In fact, seems like Guy was once considered a suspect in 2 homicides.
Oh, really? And his name wasn't flagged when they went to check him up on that either?
Back in July of 1979, Jen.
When
he was in junior high. He was in junior high.
He was a little guy then. Wow.
Angela Meeker, who was a classmate of Guy Rasmussen, had ventured out one day. She was walking to the mall, and she disappeared. Her body has never been found. And as years passed, it was determined to be a homicide. Now, police really kind of suspected him, but they couldn't tie him to it. So fast forward to January 1980. Carla Wright was walking to school and simply disappeared. Carla's remains would be discovered just 12 days later, deep in the woods near Tacoma. What piqued the detective's attention about this particular crime scene was that, just like Cindy, Carla had been raped. Just like Cindy, her body was wrapped up and tossed away. Just like Cindy, she was a victim of a blitz-style attack, meaning she was attacked from behind, never to see it coming. And just like Cindy, she suffered at the hands of the man who killed her. Even though at age 13, he was suspected in these homicides, they had nothing to tie him to it, so he walked.
Jeez, you would think he would have left some clue at 13.
Right?
You would have,
I think during these early crimes, Guy Rasmussen learned a little bit about crime, I guess. And it's that, you know, the bigger the kid, the bigger the fight. Who are you going to pick on? Somebody that you can overpower, hence a little girl, right? So at 13, he was going up against these girls that were about his age. So it was harder to take them down.
I got what you were talking about.
Right. He learned that you had to. Now, as I got farther into this and looked, and I found this later, which is weird because whatever, but Rasmussen would also be convicted in 1982 of sexual assault on a 16-year-old girl. And he would actually serve 5 years in prison on that charge. In 1990, he served 5 months after pleading guilty to an assault on a 10-year-old girl from Olympia, Washington. So talk about writing on the wall, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why is this guy not flagged, right? So detectives head back to Guy Rasmussen's house, but this time they bring along their little friend by the name of Mr. Search Warrant.
Mm-hmm. He's kind of a nice guy.
He gives no Fs, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Once inside, officers locate his dirty clothes, which he kept in the bathtub, which I thought, well, that's not so odd, is it? But then it said how dirty his place was.
Mm.
I guess maybe not. I don't know. Just saying. Inside the bathtub, officers locate tie-dye t-shirts, which, of course, they take into custody. And they also take all his jean shorts, which, did the guy wear a lot of jean shorts? I guess so.
That
was the style then.
It was before cargo pants was all the rage, I guess, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But what they did find really did kind of, I don't know, make a little note. They found some socks, like tube socks, that had grass seeds. And, you know, like we know, we're from somewhat the sticks. Cockle burrs and like the little grass seeds and stuff get, when you walk through a field, they get stuck in your clothing, right? So mm-hmm. they found that in the sock, and they collect that as well. Now, who knows if that's, you know, going to prove to be anything, but of course, this is our true crime podcast, so maybe it will.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, if people who don't know what cockle burrs are, they're also called beggar's lice, just in case.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
Officers, after collecting these dirty clothes in the bathtub, they come out and they confront Guy Rasmussen with the fact that two witnesses had claimed that they saw him walking hand in hand with the little girl that fit Cindy's description on July 4th that very afternoon. Now, Guy tells them he was long gone. He was going to that music festival. He had left earlier. And you know what? Even his friend could vouch for him. Detectives reach out to the friend, and he says, well, heck yeah, we went to that music festival, but I got to be honest, I can't remember exactly what time I picked him up for the trip. Mm-hmm. Police know that they can't or won't just sit by and wait until he messes up. So they decide they want to, you know, put the pressure on him. Knowing his type of personality, he's not going to like being followed 24/7. You know, so they put the heat on him, right? They're following him around, and it works. He gets angry, Jen, and he decides to be a guest on a local radio show.
Oh, God, I love all those people. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he tells the station that he is very angry and he wants to voice his frustration about even being considered a suspect because he doesn't even know how his name got into that, that mess, right?
Tell me about the detectives. Do you think they're getting a bad rep?
I don't even know how my name got brought into this.
What is your side of the story?
Okay, so I met the little girl. I met her in March. You know, and I have a jam room out back, and she was impressed with it. And so she, you know, I'm a musician. I ain't gonna push no kid away, you know.
All right, Raz. I can't think of anything else I need to ask you except for one more thing. Did you kill Cindy Ellinger?
Oh, Jesus, no. God, no. No way. Raz is incapable of doing anything like that.
But, you know, that is exactly the type of person that would do this, right?
He protests too much, methinks.
Typical of the loser kind of guy, he's above it all, Jen. They have the wrong person. No one knows what they're talking about. He's an innocent guy. He likes kids. He's a musician.
He does like kids. That's the problem.
He's an artist, Jen. Mm-hmm. He's an artist. He's a drummer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Police are not... They know this kind of guy, right? They know, and they decide that they need to go at him, I guess, more on his playing field, right? They need to go at him in a way that they know he's going to respond. And that is all ego, baby. Mm-hmm. He's an artist, right? So they head over to his place and they, you know, ask him, hey, let's go retrace your steps on that July 4th day to maybe figure out not only what you were doing, but how those witnesses mistakenly saw a person they thought was you, right? Mm-hmm. Clearly, they're wrong. You're right. And, you know, we just need to knock you out of the suspect pool, get you out of here. And, you know, we want to take you off the list since you did not do it.
Well, obviously, yeah.
Well, of course, Guy Rasmussen, he's like, heck yeah, because I didn't do it. So he hops in the police car. Hops in the police car, Ben, because he doesn't have a car and he walks everywhere, which is a little telling later. He agrees to show detectives exactly where he went that day. As they set out and they, you know, are asking him to describe his day, he says that at first, after he left the house, he walked to the gas station because he needed to contact his friend. He needed a ride. And so he called his friend from the gas station to come pick him up. Now, Detective Adamson remembers the cadaver dog hit, and that scent trail went exactly to that payphone, and this was the same payphone. So it's like, okay, that may or may not explain why his scent was found there, but then also he confirmed that he was there, right? So it's kind of like a twofold deal. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Rasmussen did make a call that day, but after calling, He got into his friend's car, and that would explain the end of the scent trail. Now, interesting, but not really concrete information, right? Mm-hmm. You can't really tie anything there. As detectives spend the better part of that long day hauling his butt around and listening to his tales of the day, they end at the site where Cindy's body was found. Once they arrive at the scene where Cindy's body was found, detectives pay close attention to Rasmussen and his behavior, trying to see if he may, you know, tell on himself, but he doesn't give up a thing. As they leave the scene, something occurs to Detective Berg. So she asks Guy, hey, so have you ever been to this location or maybe anywhere near here? Guy answers with a big no, and he says he's never been in that area. He's only walked on the trails, and those are the trails that he showed to detectives that day, and that was nowhere near that site. Well, with that statement, he sealed his fate. Because remember those grass seeds on his socks? Mm. Yep. Well, he better hope none of those seeds match seeds in the area where Cindy's body was found. Detectives call on a forensic botanist, and he's brought in, and the botanist was able to pick out a dozen species of grass seeds that were found on Rasmussen's socks and name them. Could you imagine that job? Seriously.
Well, you go into it because you absolutely love it, I'm sure, right?
I know, but I was like, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Kudos to you, buddy. So the botanist tests samples upon samples of grasses from all those trails that Rasmussen had told the detectives he took that day. So he tested, I mean, we're talking lots of
I can only imagine.
Seeds from all those trails, right? Mm-hmm. None of the grass seeds from Rasmussen's socks matched any of those seeds that they had retrieved from the trails that he claimed he walked that day. You want to guess where the seeds from Rasmussen's socks were actually matched to?
I'm going to say probably around where Cindy's body was.
That is right. Yep, the place where little Cindy's body was found. His pants were on fire, and they were able to connect him to the location via the grass seeds. See, I just said his pants were on fire because you just said it.
I know. He is a dirty, dirty liar. Dirty hippie liar musician guy.
Now, even though his pants might have been on fire, Guy probably should have burnt those pants, a.k.a. shorts, because the crime lab is about to get back to police. They are able to identify blood DNA on those shorts, and that blood DNA belonged to Cindy. Mixed in with the blood was semen that belonged to Guy Rasmussen.
Bingo, we got him.
Detectives go to pick up Guy Rasmussen for the murder of Cindy Allinger. He is furious, and once in the back of the cop car, he actually hisses at the detectives.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he asks, why would you do this to me? Why would you do this to me, right?
Because you killed a little girl.
Thank you!
And molested
Guy
her.
Bastard. Thank you. Guy Rasmussen saw a weak, little, beautiful girl who trusted him, and he took the chance to steal her life and never even thought about it. Guy Rasmussen was sentenced to life in prison for the murder of Cindy Allinger. In 2014, Rasmussen, he decides he needs to go back and, well, I guess his attorney is dead. He makes a plea that he wants his case retried because that DNA evidence that was a little bit newer back when he was convicted has now come a long way. It's 2014 after all. And he is asking that they retry some of that evidence and that that evidence will for sure set him free.
What?
Yeah. He's crazy. He's saying that the evidence was, faulty back in the day.
Okay.
He's claiming that the evidence that he was actually convicted with is faulty. And if they retested that now today, he would definitely be cleared of the crime.
And if it's not, yeah, I mean...
Well, normally I might say maybe the guy's got a point, but if you look at his pants,
were they ever able to prove that he hurt the other girls or he?
No, those cases are still unsolved. Mm. Nope. Mm-hmm. But it is weird, right? That when you do something so evil, you know, and it has to be torment for the parents and the police officer that no. They did it. Mm-hmm. They know somebody did it, and you just
you don't have enough evidence.
You can't nail them. It's like the last case we just did where they waited all those years. Mm-hmm. And they knew. But if you go up and you...
You can only try them once. It's that damn double jeopardy.
And it's, if you fail, you're screwed. And then you can't do it again. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying, though. When I was writing this, and you know, how many times do I always say, you know, they're not the only one. You know, nobody, none of these brutal, awful, horrendous people do a one and done.
Right.
Never. There's always more. There's always signs.
Wow. So he's still in prison, but he's...
He's still in prison, kind of fighting it a little bit, yeah, but whatever. He's going to be there forever.
Good.
So, and he's...
It's fine by me.
She's bald. She's bald.
Well, I'm glad the son of a bitch is in jail.
So should we tell people what happened today?
Yeah, go ahead.
Should we tell people how much we do for this podcast?
Go for it. It's your story. It's not my story. It's your story. So you go ahead and you tell it.
You act like you couldn't have the same story. You totally have the same story.
I'm sure, right? I've got tons of stories, but this one is all yours. So
Jen and I are getting ready to record. And, you know, yesterday was July 4th. And so I'm finishing up the episode. I decide I'm done. And I'm like, Jen, almost ready.
Give me 15 minutes. We'll go downstairs. Just all I need is 15 minutes. And I said, perfect, because I've got to set up all the equipment.
Yep. So a little bit later, I text Jen and I say, boy, do I have a story for you. And I sent her a picture.
And it's been past 15 minutes, by the way.
Oh, of course it was, because now we're going to find out why, right? Mm-hmm. So I decide I got to reconfigure my closet, which has clothes in it, but also a desk.
And that's also where she records, by the way.
Where I record. So it has my computer and it's got whatever. So I decide I'm going to just, I got to move stuff, because last week it was a little questionable and I threw stuff on the ground. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to shove this in the corner and I'm going to move it and make it more air friendly, if we shall, right? Recording friendly. So as I'm doing it, the desk collapses. It breaks and it falls on my foot, my toe, more specifically.
My big toe.
And I was cussing and saying the F word and screaming, so much so that my daughter, who was downstairs, was like, hello, are you okay? And I was like, okay, well, my son's upstairs. And I can hear from the silence, because usually he's blaring his computer, whatever. He knows. So I'm like, thanks, Hayden. Thanks for asking if I'm okay. What did I do? Right, of course. So I was like, okay, whatever. I gotta get in there. We gotta get this episode out. So as I'm coming in here, I look down at my sock, because I have socks on because my feet are freezing, and there's blood. And I was like, oh no. So I take off my sock, and apparently when that desk fell on my foot, it snapped my toenail in half, and I may or may not have broke my toe. However, the podcast must go on.
We are here. Thank you for your severe bloody toe and dedication to the show.
Thank you. No, it's like, thank you for your service and sacrifice. That's what I mean.
I will say, in your picture, your pedicure did look really nice until all the blood.
It didn't, though, because, and that's why I was like, don't make fun of me. It's Corona time. This is like a homemade pedicure. But anyway, my toe didn't hurt. And then I told Jen, I'm like, I got to go get a beer because I got to numb the pain. Because as soon as that pain kicks in, it's going to be in the middle of the podcast. And I was right. It started throbbing big time in the middle of the podcast. But you know what? We're here for you. Broken toe, broken toenail. Doesn't matter. So, and then Jen and I were discussing that we are going to hit 2 years this next week. And I said, nobody. I mean, there is not one person that has as many issues / signs from the great gods above that we should not be podcasters. I mean, really. You name it, we've endured it. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sound issues. Continually sound issues. As a matter of fact, I keep hearing static as I speak sometimes. So I'm just praying that Nico doesn't have a heart attack.
Nico's going to be like it. The sound was terrible on that. After I limped in here with my one good foot. And I'm recording literally my computers because I don't have a desk now, on a laundry basket. My mic is on a stool. And then I read that script off my phone, which I usually, because I'm blind, so I usually do it off the computer. Here we are.
Yay. In other words, we love you guys. Long story short.
I was just like, you know what? The pain hasn't kicked in, so we got to knock this out before. That's what I kept thinking.
All right. Well, this week, stay tuned before our bloopers and hear the promo from our friends at the Forgotten News Podcast.
And until we see you next week, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Oh, bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vane. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
And let me say right here, I was watching the first 48 hours, but it's the missing person season from yesterday. And they kept calling it a lie box. We got to get them on the lie box. And I thought that was so funny. So,
a lie box?
Okay. Lie box, like lying, you know? Mm-hmm. He also worked part-time as a railroad. That's kind of railroad worker.
Railroad crossing. Yep. Railroad. So he's been working at the railroad?
Don't make me say it again.
All the live long day?
Don't make me say it again, John. The medical examiner comes in. He determines that due to insect activity, Cindy was... I can hear you doing... What are you doing?
Sorry, I just picked up a piece of paper and put it somewhere else. Sorry, I didn't mean
it. It's okay. It was like you were like reading a book or something. I'm like, am I in the way?
I had a piece of paper in front of me and it was bugging me. So I picked it up to put it.
I know. I'm just
picked it up and folded it and put it in. My apologies. Go on.
It's okay. Because Jennifer, because you know what? We are like the postal service.
We deliver. Oh, yeah. We do deliver. Through rain, snow, sleet, bloody toe. Mm-hmm. We're there for you.
Stay tuned for that. All right. What piqued the detective's attention were the details of this particular crime scene. Jen. Sorry.
Jean's the other name I go by. That's my witness protection name.
No, it was Jan. It was Jan. Jan. Mm-hmm. Jan and Pam.
Jan remember? And Pam. Mm-hmm. From October Pod.
Oh,
Edward geez. October Pod.
Yeah. No, it was that person who thought that was it. But then remember that one guy's like, oh, hi, Pam, to me. It's not Pam, it's Cam. But okay, whatever. Do you remember? Never mind.
No.
I think it was that Crime Gone.
Everybody and thinks you're like, Pam.
That's what I'm saying.
Pam Anderson, so it's fitting.
No, it is not.
You're like twins.
Yeah, right. Okay, sorry.
And bizarro world.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. They're careful to pick.
Spit They're it out. Careful. You can do it. Spit it out.
Oh, sorry. Spit it out, Camille. Spit it out.
Push it out. They're careful. Shove it out. Way out.
It's gross. No. As they're leaving and going back to the patrol car, as they're leaving and getting,
are they going to talk about a crotch anytime? Anywhere? Yes. Yeah.
Shut up. That is the worst thing.
Your private crotch. Can you say that?
Shut up. I hate you. Nope. I'll say F you. How about that? You want to spell it? Okay.
I don't think you can spell it.
You probably can't. As you want to guess where the seeds on rest. That's what I put right. Because I say, whatever. So Jen.
Yes.
Do you want to guess? Jen. Okay, hold on. Jen.
Hey, yeah.
Now it seems fake.
It does.
He actually hisses at the detectives. He hisses like a snake. Hiss. That's a slippery snake. I'm a slippery snake.
I can't believe it. That sounds like a total like comic book villain.
Right?
I can't believe you caught me.
He looks like he was a wannabe. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, if we can't actually play a clip for the audio here, we'll put it on the website, baby.
Maybe. Well, also, we could reenact.
We could reenact it. Oh, our acting skills are subpar at best. But yeah.
At best.
Bloody toe. Bloody, bloody toe. Yeah.
Now I'm going to laugh.
Wait a minute. Have you heard the strange and unusual stories of the Forgotten News Podcast?
Hello, everyone. This is Jim.
This is Kit Karen.
We host the Forgotten News Podcast.
On our show, we tell true stories from history, but not the stories you learned in school.
We tell stories that are obscure,
mysterious,
weird,
wild.
For example,
the teenage girl who committed the last stagecoach robbery in the United States in 1899.
The really dumb gang of crooks who unintentionally kidnapped the lieutenant governor of Idaho in 1929.
The group of old ladies in 1893 who would secretly go out at midnight to catch stray cats and then, speed up their journey to heaven.
The farmer who vanished into thin air in front of witnesses as he simply walked across his empty dirt yard in 1889.
So, on any given episode, our stories might be serious, silly, or sad.
But they will always be a true story.
So now you know pretty much everything about what to expect on the Forgotten News Podcast.
We think you'll like it.
Thank you for listening.